were discussing a bill, and we finally got, I think we've got a quorum of senators. I guess we're taking roll in the afternoon. So, Don, take the roll, please.
Senator Dockstetter?
Yes.
Senator Hastert?
Here.
Senator Meyer?
Here.
Senator Perkins?
Here, too.
Representative Burkhart?
Here.
Representative Escobel?
Here.
Representative Moniz?
Here.
Representative Nicholas?
Here.
Representative Stubson?
Excuse.
Representative Wallace?
Here.
Co-Chairman Bebout?
Excused.
Chairman Harshman?
Here.
Mr. Chairman, you have a quorum.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Senators. Okay. Next, Agency 11. So, Director Schmidt, why don't you come on up and introduce us to your lineup and take us through your budget cuts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ed Schmidt, Director of Department of Revenue. I have Christy Urich with me today. Christy is our budget officer and admin services administrator for that division, which is the person who is responsible for distributing all the taxes around the state. So we rely on her very heavily. And I have two of my cohorts in the back who you've all probably seen before.
We have a new, pretty new committee, so go ahead.
Okay. So Marvin Applequist with the Property Tax Division and Dan Noble with Excise Tax Division. Mr. Chairman, so I have, what, 7 minutes left? Is that when I have a seven-minute presentation as well. As
we can move that. We can give you those 7 minutes back. We're waiting on a quorum.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. The just to give you a real quick breakdown on what the budget cuts were for the Department of Revenue, there was a total of $759,000 that we were asked to do as far as the 8% cut. And we submitted that, clear back in, I believe it was May sometime. And it's changed a little bit, but by and large it stayed about the same, and I will take it through with you real quickly. There was an AWAC position that had been assigned to the admin division, which is, in other words, they actually worked for me. And we used that money occasionally for, we did not fill the position, but we used that position to help us do some research and that sort of thing when we had questions that we wanted to do, and we just cut that position and eliminated it. The information technology division, we had 8 individuals in the IT division. And that is one of the divisions that we have transferred over to the ETS. And then we had one additional individual who was out at the liquor division. And that individual at the liquor division is still working for us at this time and has actually been reassigned back to the liquor division. You know, the new warehouse is out on the Campstool Road about 5 miles out of town. And it's he's critical for all the operations we have. And so he stays there on a permanent basis. The we have 4 individuals.
Is he director? Excuse me. Is he still doing IT stuff for you, or is it?
Yes.
He was an IT person. That his position and money got transferred to ETS, but you found another position that you assigned him to.
Well, no, actually, he's actually still in the same occupied the same position he was in before. He's for instance, we have a catalog, you know, where we do what we call our ordering system, online ordering system for alcohol, system for alcohol in the state. He was one of the people who designed that system, and so you can get on just like one-stop shopping, and you can order whatever it is, kind of wine, spirits that you need. And so he administers that. He has to have a lot of product knowledge, however, in order to, because we have constant changeover in the products that we offer and so forth. And then we have a whole new warehouse system, which is what we call Pick-to-Voice. That's a brand-new system for us that the Appropriations Committee legislature gave us funds for several years ago. We now have that installed, and what that basically means is all the warehouse workers, when they go around on their tuggers and they pick up the alcohol, they have a earphone that tells them go to row B, section C, go to this bin, and you pick up a case of Grey Goose or whatever it is, something like that. And then we now have also a new system out there, which is a pick. We use the pick to voice, but it's single bottle breakdown. So we can actually sell and deliver single individual bottles to any 1,250 retailers in the state. And that is a much more complex, difficult thing to do. And so our IT man helps us with that as well.
A real specialized kind of deal that...
Very specialized. To be honest with you, I don't think there'd be any way that a normal IT person, if they didn't have that product knowledge and all the other things, could work out there.
Sure. So. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, then within the Department of Revenue itself, by the way, that's an enterprise fund, so it's really outside the purview here. But the IT division, I had an administrator who was a programmer, and he administered all of the programs. And we have two fundamental programs that we operate on. They're platforms, one's for the excise tax division, one's for the mineral tax division, and they are... unlike an awful lot of other what you would call database programs, these are programs that actually, from the day a tax return comes in the door, it's scanned into the system, sent to the work queues, and our people work the tax returns, and ultimately it spits it out on the other side into whatever the distribution of the funds are and so forth. So if those systems go down, even for a matter of a few hours, we may well have 40 or 50 people sitting around twiddling their thumbs. So it is absolutely critical that it be up and functioning all the time. So while I must admit that I was a little hesitant about losing the control of those individuals, four of those individuals, programmers who have subject matter expertise on the excise tax and on the mineral tax, are staying with us. They report to the ETS, but at least they're in shop, and so we usually have access to them just about any time. Then there were four other positions which were subject of the possibility of moving to the ETS. Those were the ones in our property tax division that administer and take care of the CAMA system. Those are very, very much a subject matter expertise because you have to have background and appraisal, and you actually, they almost function like a help desk to all the county assessors. And I was able to win the day on that battle, and they still are staying in with the property tax division. Mr. Chairman, then just to move on, one of the positions we cut about $109,000 out of that information technology budget, which was for training, for travel, and so forth like that. And some of that money was transferred to the ETS. We have a $144,000 budget item where we eliminated a position, which was the field representative position, and the office in the Torrington, Wyoming office. That was, we had 10 field reps, and that was a hard one to give up. One of the things that happened in that particular case is, I think it was back in March, that individual that was in that position unfortunately passed away from cancer, so we simply did not fill that position. And what we have done is cover that workload by using the field rep from Cheyenne, field reps from other locations to kind of cover that, and so we have done that up to this point, and it's not the best of all worlds, but it was one that we felt like we had to give up.
Yes, Senator Meyer,
can you tell us what the duties are of a field rep?
Well, they're pretty involved, but they do all the license deliveries for everybody who's a new vendor in the excise tax system. What we have always wanted to do is go and meet with them personally and have them hand them a booklet and explain their responsibilities as far as collecting sales tax and how they report, so that it really seems to lessen the amount of mistakes that are made in reporting. They also do conduct some of the cigarette inspections. We have to follow the master settlement agreement. So those people are we're covering inspections in Laramie, Goshen, Niobrara, Converse, and Natrona counties. And so what we had to do is reduce those inspections from about 50% to about 30% of the retail establishments. That money is the reason why we have to comply with that master settlement agreement, because that money gets distributed back to the state. And if you aren't in compliance, you can actually theoretically lose that ability to have that money. We feel like we can cover it with fewer bodies in this particular case, but again, it's not ideal.
So you're still able to make those contacts, that face-to-face contacts, hand to people there?
Just means more windshield time for individuals having to come from, say, Laramie or from Cheyenne or whatever else to cover those areas. So there is more driving involved, and we lose some of the time for those other individuals.
And that's basically just a one-man shop there. He just worked out of his
That's
home.
Correct. That's correct, sir.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Another, and maybe the most important thing is that the those field reps also are the people who try to pursue delinquencies, and they meet with individuals who are delinquent. They try to assist them in trying to get caught up. If there's collection activities that have to be done, if we put them on a work plan or whatever else, those are, I think, maybe one of the most important aspects of their job. And we do lose a little bit of that one-on-one, personal, hands-on experience. We'd like to be able to meet with those individuals rather than just doing it from Cheyenne. I think, though, that overall we think that we can do the job, and in a minute I'll explain to you that what ultimately has happened, and this has happened since we originally proposed this, is that we are in the process of installing. We've just now finished the mineral tax, the new mineral tax system. So we worked on it for 3 years, and we have gained some efficiencies in that system. One of the things that it will do for us is we had one person that was devoted full-time to whenever the Department of Audit did audits, there had to be downloads manually done from what their audit findings were into our system in order to create the sales tax assessments. And fortunately, after talk with Mr. Grenvick, who's our mineral tax administrator, and Mr. Noble, Mr. Grenvick felt like he could get by without that position. So what we are in the process of doing right now is going back and we're going to rehire and restore that position in Torrington so that we have a full complement of sales tax reps. And I think this is one instance where you can say that the ability to improve our technical aspects has really helped the department, and we've done a little savings there. Finally, we had a significant amount of in-state and out-of-state travel and training and educational training for our state assessed and our property tax individuals. As you know, they go around to the state. They assist assessors when they have problems in assessments on residential commercial properties and so forth. And they do quite a bit of travel. And we've had to cut back that travel. We're just going to simply have to do it by phone more than we have done in the past. And finally, the biggest single individual reduction was about a $355,000 reduction. What we ultimately had to do was turn off the GIS component of the CAMAS system to all the counties. What we were faced with was the CAMAS system has the one side of it, which is strictly the evaluation and appraisal aspect of it. Yet they had, as a add-on to this package that we had purchased from this vendor, a GIS component. And basically what it was it helped to provide a mapping service that you could use and the assessors could use to show people at the counter how it all worked. That, in my judgment, when I had to look at it, I had to determine, I said, the $355,000 to spend for that is not something that everybody needs, because there's probably 8 to 10 county offices that prefer to find and have created their own in-house systems for GIS and mapping. And they weren't interested in having this portion of the CAMAS system, the GIS. So based on that, I decided my choice was, if we had to come up with $355,000, that would have basically meant 3 to 4 positions that I would have had to give up. And to my mind, that was the choice that we had, and I elected to do this. And that decision had to be made prior to July 1st because the contract was about to be renewed. So essentially what we had to do was roll the dice and assume that the 8%, was it going to happen or was it not? We assumed that it was. We went ahead and made that cut, and then I had to make the justification to the governor's office. And lo and behold, here at the very end, the governor looked at it. He'd heard some concerns that maybe from the Revenue Committee and others that, why do you want to cut off that system? And so they have restored the $355,000. So we now have that built into our budget. It will cover us on all the county assessor's offices for the rest of this biennium, and then it will be a standard budget item in the next biennium. And so that's where we stand, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, committee, and you know, our part of our standard, kind of, we're getting the word out, I mean, that this is probably just the first round, you know, and we've kind of had some analysis by budget office, by our folks, on really what cuts can be biennialized or what's your just one time. And so we're kind of getting the word out as we go forward and we see each other, you know, 11 months from now, looking at that 8% target. And you're pretty good. I mean, there's, as I look at yours, is there's going to have to probably, you know, who knows, but have that mindset of some expenditure controls as we come back. And it's tough. I know it's a tough deal, but appreciate all your good work, and been a lot of changes, a lot of innovation in your department. We appreciate all your staff and their good work. And committee, is there any questions now? Senator Meyer.
Yeah, I'm just trying to get the numbers of balance here. The governor's recommendation is $403,614 of cuts. Is that correct?
I think that's correct.
That's basically about 4% rather than 8%. Is that where we're at?
That's probably correct. That's about what it turns out to be.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm just curious if you were going to make another 4% cut and you didn't cut this program, where would you cut? Have you analyzed that yet?
Well, we would have probably started from the lowest positions we could find. Probably we would have had to take somebody from excise tax, somebody from minerals, probably somebody from property tax, try to figure out the best way to do the coverage on this. But, you know, the Department of Revenue is over 87% of our budget is all in salaries and benefits. Mm-hmm. So there's not a lot of fat to cut anymore. And if we don't travel at all, I don't see how we can do our job, especially when we're supposed to be the primary support for the CAMAS system statewide. And quite frankly, the other thing is that we gained a lot of compliance in our excise tax division when we started going out and doing seminars all over the state. We saw an improvement from about 65% compliance to over 95% compliance simply because we went out there, did seminars with all the tax reps and people like that that would attend the seminars, and we had them all over the state, most of it in the oil and gas industry, actually, where, you know, it's a little more complex, the rules for exemptions and so forth and taxation at a drill site and everything are more complex. And so we lessened the non-compliance when we went that route. So I'm very hesitant to cut any more into any kind of travel budgets that affect the excise tax division.
Yeah. Representative Stubbs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Director Schmidt. I wanted to follow up on some of the last comments you made about the GIS, because I'm not sure that I tracked totally. And you had said that, as I understood, you had to pull the trigger by July 1st because of your contracting. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. The contract for the new CAMA contract was a two-year contract. And there's the software portion of it, which is about $1.3 million or something like that. Then there was another $300,000 that was involved in this GIS component of it. And when we looked at our statutory charge, we didn't see how the GIS portion of it really affected negatively the ability of county assessors to complete their jobs as far as valuation goes. So it was a nice thing to have, but not critical. Now, as it turns out, we do have it back. I am happy for that. But we think we're going to do it to the Representative Harshman's comments for the next biennium. We are going to try to work with, see if we can't find a cheaper solution to have mapping, because some of the counties have already got a pretty good solution. It works pretty well. And we'd like to see if we can't find some efficiencies there.
Mr. Chairman, so to follow up on that, if we as a committee decided we liked your recommendation and that it was something that we could probably live without, are we no longer in the position to be able to cut that expenditure now?
You mean the...
Has the contract been signed?
Yeah. On the $355,000, yeah.
No, the contract was terminated, but what we were able... I was instructed by the governor's office to see if there wasn't some other way we could find some funds available. What we did is right before the end of the biennium, we looked to monies that were going to be reverted, and we came up with, I don't know, it was approximately $100,000 of reversionary funds. There's always going to be some of that. And we used that and contracted enough to make sure that we had coverage for the other counties, the remaining counties that didn't already have something in place. But now we have enough to cover it all. So I think I'm not sure I'm making that clear. But
keep going.
Mr. Chairman, I guess the bottom line question is, if JAC were at the end of this process to say, we want to go with the agency recommendations, we want to eliminate that expenditure of the $355,000, are we in a position to go ahead and do that?
Mr. Chairman, we probably don't need, I guess what I'm saying is we probably don't need the full $355,000, but it would mean that when we came around to the next biennium budget next year, there would be no provision for it at all. And so it would be a shame, because then there would be no funding for it available. All we did was secure enough to cover the rest of this biennium, so for the 2013. So if you recommended that it be cut, we could survive for the rest of this biennium, but then there would then be no funds available going forward.
And Mr. Chairman, just to try to put a bow on it, I guess. That would be essentially, if we did make that decision, sure, you wouldn't have that, wouldn't be in your budget the next time around, and that would essentially that GIS system would be lost going forward, correct?
It would not be. You wouldn't lose it now, but we would have to come back in the next biennium budget, next year or whatever. We'd have to come back and argue for funding for that component.
I guess the part I'm kind of getting to is there $355,000 still there to cut? Is that what we're... That's the bottom line, I think.
Am I right in that? There is.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator?
I think this is the point that Representative Sebson's trying to get at is, ultimately, if we were to accept the agency's recommendation and this was cut, would the department be in breach of contract because we've got a signed contract now that we don't have an ability to fund for? I think that's what you're trying to get
to. Mr. Chairman, no. We canceled the contract. We had to cancel the contract prior to knowing whether we were going to have. It was a decision I made because I figured if I didn't cut that $355,000, then I would be forced with having to try to lay off three or four individuals. So
you did. You chose to cut this, keep three or four individuals, got this back. What's the $350,000? What's it going to be used for in the next 18 months? It's going to sit there and then be a placeholder for the next standard budget? Is that what is going to revert or be B11? Or?
Well, that's, Mr. Chairman, that's very astute of you, but that is.
I think we're all trying to get to the.
No,
point
I.
On it,
it is. Yes, it is. What we did is we found enough money in reversionary money to cover what we could do to take care of the counties for the rest of this biennium. And the $355,000, we are not contractually obligated. So, yes, sir, it sits there.
Okay.
I would think that we would be able to find uses for it, obviously.
Oh, I'm sure you could. I'm sure we can, too. So, okay, well, that's good, and that's a good line of question. Any other questions on this? Go ahead, co-chair.
And I came in late, and I apologize, but Ed, so just so I understand, your opinion is if you reduce this, you already terminated the contract. If we decide not to approve the governor's rec to put the money back in, it goes away. You have other ways to take care of the counties. Is that what you said?
We have ways. We have done that already. We have enough to take care of for the rest of the biennium.
Thank
this
you.
Biennium.
Senator Meyer.
Couple of things, Ed. On the authorized full-time employees, we've got two funding sources there, and so part of it is by the other funds. That's $210,402,000. That's liquor sales, I'm assuming.
That would be the enterprise fund.
Yeah, and so of that I guess we got 118 now after we take out the tech people. How many of those are general fund funded, and how many of them are other fund funded?
Only one position out at the liquor division is an enterprise fund, and so far they haven't quite been able to figure out how you can charge that service from an enterprise fund back to the general fund, or the I don't know, the vice versa. Maybe that's the way it is. Can you explain that? Do you remember how that works?
Members of the committee, Senator, I believe you're talking about the total revenue, total employees.
Yeah, you've got a total of 118 after the revised appropriation, and of that 118 going forward, how many of those are they all paid with? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out what the fund source is that the expenditures are paid for.
Yes, members of the committee and Senator, Enterprise Fund is who funds all of our liquor division employees.
No general funds in there, but the thing is that if you don't pay them, we get the reversion to the general fund, so it's like a backdoor general fund.
Yeah, we do a transfer to the general fund for those that offsetting entry.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I guess another question I've got. I'm trying to figure out how much you actually make off that, and you get purchases of 175 and sales of 210 million. Is that the difference? What you revert back to the general fund, or how would I find that number?
Mr. Chairman, well, I'm not sure if I can lay my hands out right here, but the bottom line is, what happens is that the general fund, we use the general fund and we operate out of that. There's an appropriation made of about $175 million, which is used for purchase of liquor and wine sales. And then as soon as that money comes back in, because we're all of our customers on a cash base, as soon as it comes back in, it goes right back into the general fund. So it's moving in and out, but it really, we never lose that. Then anything over and above our operating expenses out there is automatically has to be put into the general fund. So like this past year, we put in approximately $14.5 million into the general fund. That, by the way, is about double of what it was 6-7 years ago.
I'm trying to figure out what your float is there, because it isn't $210 million. You've got a float out there of about $40 million or something that's going in and out, buying liquor, coming back and forth. And so if we look at the number that I'm just trying to figure out how we account for that, and the money just goes right back into the general fund. Well, so what is the float?
Oh, Mr. Chairman, I guess I'm probably losing the gist of your question, but I would be happy to sit down and explain it to you.
Okay, thank you.
I think
Mr.
it
Chairman.
Just would take a little while for me to have the same figures that you have in front of you. And
I'll get with Ed and get a clear understanding of it, so I understand how this thing works.
Are you the Senate man on this budget? Is that?
No, I'm just.
Yeah, I hear you. No, that's all education for the committee. So we can. Any other questions? Senator Perkins.
Sure. Did you guys upgrade the CAMA software this year? Was that the upgrade this year, or was it last year?
Mr. Chairman, we have not upgraded the CAMA.
Haven't yet.
We have to move to a version 5. We're in version 4 now. And unfortunately, we've been waiting on our vendor for now close to 3 years, and they have yet to perform. So it has become somewhat of a real stressor for us because... Now, there's a lot of issues with the company, but we in order for us to operate the CAMA system, we have to satisfy the enterprise technology team that this new version 5 will operate in a new environment that they want to put it into. And right now, the vendor has been unable to establish that. And I will just tell you, since I've got the microphone, at some point in time in July of this year when we have to put our budget together, I seriously doubt if I still will have a hard number that I could come and ask you for to say this is what we need to fund the CAMA system for the next biennium. And that is going to be unsatisfactory because at some point in time we are going to simply have to say that we need a certain amount of money and hope that it covers the amount necessary, because the company has not been forthcoming and given us enough satisfaction about whether the CAMA system will work the way they represent that it will.
Mr. Chairman, just following up on that, in doing that, where are they as far as support for version 4? Is that degrading now to the extent that it's causing, that there's glitches and causing errors, or is it is the platform under version 4 fairly stable at this point in time?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, it's the hardware is degrading. I mean, it's been in existence for 4 years. We still have it under warranty with Dell, but that the ETS told us to terminate that contract, and they would support the hardware all around the state. So I think that will be a problem in the future because we have no funds for new hardware.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's – but the as you your question about version 4, the company has assured me that they will continue to provide support for version 4 as long as the department – or as long as the state is on version 4. And they have clients all over in Colorado, Utah, Wyoming – I mean New Mexico and so forth, they're on the same version 4. They're trying to convert to version 5. So far, they've only been capable of demonstrating it to work in about 3 counties in Utah. And providing that service in a county is totally different situation than providing it to an entire state because there's a lot more people hitting and bombarding that base. So,
and Mr. Chairman, one last question on that in that regard. Do you guys have any concerns about the software company and its ability, its financial stability, so that it doesn't disappear on us? Because obviously we'd be in a heck of a bind if our software software provider disappeared over the hill on us for bankruptcy or some other problem.
Mr. Chairman, I guess yes, I do have some concerns. I mean, they've had 20% layoffs. They went out and they found a partner, an industry partner from back east that I thought was going to provide some infusion of money. And but they won't tell me the details of what that is. There's restructuring going on within their organization, which is one of the problems. And with the layoffs, that's one of the problems why we have not been able to get the kind of continuity we'd like from that company. On the other hand, we are joined at the hip with this company. And a lot of people say, well, why don't you just go out and buy another, find another company? They simply don't exist. If they do, it would take 3-4 years to turn it over, and we'd have an uprising from the county assessors if we even proposed to try to do something like that. So we are nursing them along I am confident that we'll get something together, but it has been a struggle. It really has. The initial CAMAS system, when we went from the old system to the new, we put a company online. We hired them, and I don't know if you recall, this has been a lot of years ago, but I ended up firing that company and letting them go. They went under, and we started all up again. And this company has got a very, very good software package. It's just that it's not built on a very solid technical platform. And that's what they're working on. They say it's going to be much better, but to date they haven't demonstrated that.
Okay, I think we're about ready to wrap up. Is there any requests for any information? Do you want a one-pager on the history of this system, or are we... Everybody good? And I think if we have requests for information, we'll get to you, Director. And I think there's going to be some more issues on the CAMA system. So, okay. Thank you. Appreciate
thank you very
your
much.
Good work, and we'll talk to you again,
okay.
I'm sure.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is Pipeline Authority. We'll get back on schedule. Agency 9. What we've kind of done is we've divided up the budget kind of between different representatives and kind of give them the first whack, and Representative Stepson will be the, I believe, the point guy on this budget. And how about the senator over here? I said, co-chair Bebout. So with that, if Director, if you need to introduce anybody, you're, of course, introduce yourself and take us through your budget.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Brian Jeffries. I'm the Executive Director of the Wyoming Pipeline Authority. We've previously delivered a handout to the committee, so to save time and not go through that handout, I'll do the briefest summary of what we do and the context that that sets for our budget cuts. The business of the Wyoming Pipeline Authority is to inspire infrastructure that helps Wyoming get the highest possible prices for its mineral products that move out of here by pipeline. Higher prices equal higher taxes, higher revenues. That's why we were created 20 years ago, and that fundamental mission hasn't changed. Products move out of Wyoming, speaking primarily the natural gas, on pipelines that are regulated by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. The activities of those pipelines and their customers are not overseen by the Public Service Commission or by the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, and we're not a regulatory agency, but what goes on interstate pipelines as to how quickly they're built, where they're built, the rules and terms and conditions of their tariffs all impact Wyoming. So one of our, as part of our mission of getting infrastructure in place to give us access to better markets, includes preserving access. And so a large part of our budget, beyond salaries and the cost of having an office, go to our costs, our costs of participating in Federal Energy Regulatory Commission proceedings. And so in that context, as we look to how we can accommodate the 8% budget cut, given that we are a staff of three, we really have to go to travel expenses, outside legal expenses, and how we participate in those proceedings. You know, we've always had a limit on our budget, so we've always had to make decisions about which proceedings are where we should fight, and use your powder accordingly. That's where we go to accommodate this budget cut, and it means that threshold of when we would run out of powder occurs a little sooner than it would have otherwise, but that's the sort of decisions that you have to make, and that's what we will do to accommodate the budget cut. So our budget cut comes out of what we'd use to fund those sorts of activities, including on occasion related outside engineering studies that we would have done, but you know, that's where we have to go to make it work.
Questions? Committee, it's pretty straightforward.
Mr. Chairman, just a couple of follow-up. Mr. Jeffries, in looking at the handout that you gave us on the 900 series, and those, I think, like Hush Blackwell, are those the legal fees that you expend on those FERC proceedings? Is that what that's reflecting?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stupson, that is the counsel we use for our activities with the FERC.
And, Mr. Chairman, do you have any information for the committee about trends you've seen over the last 12 or 18 months as far as issues before FERC that sort of demand your attention? Are those on the increase, or has that been sort of stable over the last couple of years as far as those issues really touching Wyoming that you have to get involved in?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stupson, they don't offer a predictable pattern, but I will say over the last probably 18 months or so, we've had fewer sort of big-ticket issues to deal with, which has been helpful because it's in anticipation of these budget cuts. We've, you know, not waited for them to happen, but tried to pick our fights accordingly. We don't have a good way of predicting what might roll out of activities on the FERC. There are 13 interstate pipelines that physically operate in Wyoming, and there are 100 or more in the United States to which those 13 then connect. So it's difficult to guess ahead of time. In the last year, it's sort of a one-off sort of thing that you can't predict. We had a merger between Kinder Morgan and El Paso, which required a fair amount of legal expenses. We examined the competitive impacts of that merger on Wyoming and made presentations to the Federal Trade Commission regarding things that the state would benefit by the FTC requiring a modification to that merger. So it's hard to predict those things. I can just say that, like I say, over the last 18 months, there has been less construction of pipelines in Wyoming. So relative to, say, the last 5 years, it's been a little quieter.
Mr. Chairman, I guess to wrap up, Chairman Bebout, Representative Moniz, and I have sort of benefited from your work over the last couple of years as we've been working on minerals and trying to have input on the federal management plans and your work on pipeline corridors and access and those sorts of things has been pretty helpful. Do you see this budget cut impacting your ability to continue that work and to continue to assist the state and the counties in commenting on those plans and having input on those plans?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stupson, the short answer is yes, because there'll be some proceeding in which we don't participate. But it's hard to turn that into a sort of cost-benefit quantitative answer of, you know, the fight you don't fight, knowing what its implications are. We'll have to use our judgment to figure out which ones are, to the best of our ability, the ones that we should participate in to the limits of our funds.
Okay, thank you.
I've got
okay.
Excuse me, I got a couple, Mr. Chairman. Hi, Brian. How you doing? The, the question I have is, and I should know this, on the contractual services, who negotiates that? Is that the board, and then the governor approves? How does that work?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, we present that to the board, and the board of the Pipeline Authority approves it.
And they approve it, right?
Yes, sir.
The last thing is we also had a special appropriation for the CO2 transmission corridors. I think we did it last year for a couple million dollars. Is there an update on that? What's the status? How are we doing?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, we're in the process of developing the specific corridors that would populate our application to the BLM so that we can – that's the tangible thing that really starts that process off is presenting that application to the BLM. That should be accomplished in the first quarter of this year.
And, Mr. Chairman, on that, when you say the BLM, are you going to the individual offices that are developing their RMPs, or are you going to the state office where, with the state director, Don Simpson? How are you doing that? How do you plan on doing that?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, I believe we will file it with the state state office so that it becomes a statewide sort of revision to the individual plans.
You know, it'll be really interesting and keep us in the loop because there's a real disconnect sometimes, and it's frustrating to the state director how what he wants to do and how it doesn't get to the district offices. So it'll be interesting to see how if you file a state plan and for the corridors and you do it there and then follow up later when we're doing an RMP or something through the legislative process when you're coming in and working on that together, particularly with minerals, if that gets down to that level, that'll be interesting.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, one comment on that. While we are pursuing this statewide revision to the corridors, we remain completely engaged in the individual
okay.
field office RMPs so that what we are seeking sort of globally, we are consistently asking for locally in each RMP so that, you know, if we can accomplish it in the revision that's being done in an individual plan, great. That'll just be one task done for the global task.
The last thing, Mr. Chairman, is, and I read a lot about projections and price of natural gas. I know you do, and you're way up, more up on it than I am. And I've looked at, I'm not going to get into all the different ones, but and I'm not going to ask you to tell us what the price is going to be. But if you could compile maybe a three or four of the ones, like Simmons is one, and there's several others that I think the one that came and spoke to us last session, you remember that you helped put that together. If you could compile like three or four of you think that would be a good cross section of what they're projecting for price and demand, and maybe do like, could you do such a good job of that and do like a one pager if you could consolidate it, you know, like near term 1 to 3 years and maybe a little more long term for the rest of the decade, and send that to this committee.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, we'd be happy to do that. We'll sort of look back and try to ascertain who's been accurate in the past, recognizing that past performance is no guarantee of future results.
Well, I'm not going to go short or long in the market based on what you tell me, Brian. So that would be nice. So I think it helps us understand because gas is so critical in our revenue stream, and it just gives us a little insight where we might be. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman. I have one question. With regards to your legal fees, do you have anyone in the Attorney General's office that performs any services for you or ever goes back to FERC or does some of the any of your type of work?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, generally, no. We actually have a memo in the file at one point from years back where the Attorney General's office recommended that we remain separate from them as part of distinguishing the Pipeline Authority. But, for example, when we addressed the issue of the Federal Trade Commission and the merger, we worked in concert with the Attorney General's office, and all of the work we did, we passed through them, and they participated in our conference calls with the FTC.
What was the logic of them being separated from the Attorney General's office?
It went back to the ability, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, it went back to the authority being set up in a position to issue bonds, and so it had to be distinct enough from the state so that it would have the ability to issue bonds, which are non-recourse to the state, and to maintain that separation of us from the state so that activities related to bond activities were appropriate in the context of the Constitution. It was just one of those optical things, I think, to preserve separation.
Okay, thank you.
Any other?
Thank you.
Okay, appreciate your time today, presentation.
Thank you.
Good work. All right, thank you. Okay, next we have Infrastructure Authority. Okay, go ahead, Director, and introduce your lineup and take us through your budget.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Lloyd Drain. I'm the Director of the Wyoming Infrastructure Authority. I've got a little sinus here today, so I apologize for that. With me today is Bryce Freeman, one of our board members.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, we've supplied a list of our Series 900 expenditures, and the other document we furnished, pardon me, was our FY 13-14 strategic plan, which accurately describes all the activities that we're currently involved in. And I'd be pleased to provide a summary of that if it pleases the committee. As far as our budget's concerned, Mr. Chairman, currently the way it stands is it reflects a $1,152 transfer from the biennium budget Series 400 funds to the Enterprise Technology Services. And then in addition to that, it reflects a $67,566 reduction in our FY14 budget, which is coming out of professional services, Series 900. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Ready? Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Drain. There's some, on page 32, I guess, of your budget submission, there's some discussion that you have in there on the financing that was done and your participation in the Wyoming-Colorado Intertie project. And there's a reference in there to a return on your investment at the time of financing on that project. And I was just wondering if you could sort of visit with us and give us an update on where that is and you know, are things still looking like they are on track for an eventual repayment of that amount, or where are we at on it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stepson, just to clarify, we've actually, with our bonding authority, we did a $34.5 million financing of some a Basin Electric facility back in 2005. As far as projects, and in the beginning, we've been around since 2004, it was necessary for the Infrastructure Authority to be a catalyst for some of these projects by actually putting in development dollars, never with an intent to own and operate. But so there's two projects, Mr. Chairman, Representative Stupson, that fall in that category. One is the Wyoming-Colorado Intertie Project, which is a project that 182-mile line that goes from the Wheatland-Chugwater area down to northeastern Colorado. And we've had some difficulty in getting that project built. There's over $1 million of state funds in that development thus far. Most of that has occurred in years prior to 2010 calendar year. But we are seeing some progress. A Wyoming company, the name of the company is Wyoming Wind and Power. It's a company owned by Scott Bloom, lives in Jackson, I think, some of the time. But they applied for 100% of the capacity on that line, which is 900 megawatts. And within the last 6 weeks, FERC finally authorized and approved that acquisition. That doesn't mean the project's going to get built, but what it does mean is that we've got an entity there that has a wherewithal to, you know, to build the generation behind the transmission, and you know, they're currently seeking a market. At such time as that project goes to financing, we'll get 100% of our money back, state funds that we've invested, plus 8% rate of return, plus a development fee. So we look forward to the day that that project goes to financing.
And I guess just to drill down a little bit more into the 67,000 cut, just curious, do you have specific studies that were anticipated that you've decided against, or is that a kind of a decision that you'll be making going forward over the next year or so?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubson, if I might go back, I mentioned there were two projects in that category. The other one is the Transwest Express project. That project is currently being developed by an affiliate of the Anschutz Corporation. That project was originally initiated by Arizona Public Service, and then subsequent to that, the National Grid and the Infrastructure Authority became involved in that project. We have approximately $400,000 and no expenditures since we sold our intellectual property rights to the Anschutz Corporation back in the fall of 2008. So when that project goes to financing, we will get those funds too and revert back to the state. And that project is looking very good.
Mr. Chairman, just to follow up on that then, for some of us who are rookies on the committee, those funds that get repaid back to you, what happens to them? Do they go into some sort of enterprise fund so that you can use them on future projects, or where do they end up when they're repaid?
No, they will go into our budget and be reverted back to the state at the end of the biennium period. We have no tags on the fund. And I might add, Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubson, that, you know, we've reached a point now that we've been so successful in getting quality developers to come in and develop transmission projects, we don't have to do this anymore. So we've transitioned much more into an advocacy role than a development role. And, Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubson, to answer your last question about the $67,000, there was no decision not to participate in a particular activity, but rather to support the request of the governor and the legislature to cut our budget by 8%, and that's where we're going to cut it.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Thanks, Lloyd. I appreciate that. I on the Cassidy and Associates in your 900 series, they're based in D.C., and it's political consulting. And I noticed, I know we spent like $426,000 in 11 and 12, and we spent $60,400 so far. How much more do you have budgeted for there, and what contractually are you obligated to?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, we actually reduced that contract a year ago by about 20%. Our current contractual obligation under that contract is $15,000 a month, and unlike the previous contract, we do have rights to terminate that contract on 60-day notice.
And the question is, and you know, I've been involved in other entities with DC consulting firms that help us politically in other states, and I guess just to think about, you know, I know you've already analyzed this carefully, and maybe at some future point we can have a conversation about the justification for it, because I think there's sometimes I wonder about us doing our own thing our own way. I remember the Kern River pipeline, and rather than hire outside consulting fees and teams and all that to go to California, we sort of did it on our own, and it worked wonderfully well. So that's just something to think about, maybe, and we're not going to do anything now about it, but to talk more in the future.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, we'd be happy to sit down and have that conversation. And I would point out that that firm does have lots of expertise in the California market as well, in addition to D.C. So they've been helpful with our outreach program to California.
Well, certainly, Mr. Co-Chair, if there's other things they do besides just, like, you know, political consulting, yeah, if there's other things, that certainly makes more sense then.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chair, again, would be pleased to have that conversation.
And the other thing, too, for the committee, I believe that the Basin Electric is one of the only bonds where we've actually sold those bonds that the legislature set up many, you know, years ago, and it's performing well, and it's really worked, has it not?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, the only thing wrong with the fact that we have a bonding authority is we haven't used it enough, and that's one of the things that the board at our strategic retreat back in the fall of last year has really impressed on staff to, you know, step up the pace there. I do believe if transmission lines were as easy to build as pipelines, we would have already seen some built. And when some of those do go to the construction phase, we're going to see numerous opportunities for us to utilize our bonding authority, and we've had some of those conversations with creditworthy folks to date. So we're looking forward to being able to use that bonding authority to the benefit of the state.
Last thing, Mr. Chairman, just a heads up, and knowing you, you're probably already on top of this. Senator Perkins and I went to a CSG national meeting. You know, we went there because of the Energy Producing States Coalition, but Representative Berger was the CSG West chairman, and there's an effort by the national group as well as the CSG West, and this is the legislative body that helps legislatures, to look at transmission corridors and transmission issues collectively with states. So just a heads up, and it's simple to get on the internet, CSG National or CSG West. I'm not sure which one it was, Drew. It was one of the two. Yeah, but it was either the national one or the west one. But they're making a conscientious effort to consolidate states that have this issue with transmission lines to see what they can do together because of corridors. Just a heads up to put that on your radar screen.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, I certainly will. It's been my experience that the more the government gets involved, the more difficult it is. And
except for the state of Wyoming legislature, right?
With the exclusion thereof, yeah. Sir. But we do have two of our projects. Pacific Corp's Gateway West is going great. As the committee knows, that's a utility, and they have a reasonable expectation of being able to recover that cost through their regulators. So that Gateway West is going to get built, and it's just a matter of the next couple of years. And also, if I might, Mr. Chairman, refer to the Transwest Express project, which I mentioned earlier, but that project is looking very viable. We've seen some great progress made, and we're confident that project has a very good likelihood of being built between now and 2017.
Let me just follow up on that just for a second. Thank you. And the Transwest, is that the one that deals with the Chokecherry and the wind farms down in Carbon County? Is that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, that's correct. Those are two separate entities, the Transwest Express and then Power Company of Wyoming. And I might mention, too, that as we've seen the Gateway projects progress in the permitting stage, you know, Pacific Corp has acknowledged the fact that they have actually brought on some generation that they really didn't have capacity for, like some of the wind that they brought on their system. In order to do that, they backed off of other generation that was connected to the system. So when that project gets built, it's not going to have the immediate impact like a Transwest Express, but I assure the committee that, and again, with the wish that it was as easy to build transmission overhead that it was to bury pipelines, but I assure the committee that if that when one of these 3,000 megawatt projects gets built, it's going to provide an instant tax base increase of $4 to $6 billion It's going to result in lots of new jobs, and it's going to remake some of the communities that some of these projects would be located in, Mr. Chairman.
Turn my mic on. We appreciate you appearing today. Are there any other questions in or comments? Representative Nicholas.
With regards to the Cassidy Associates contract, do they provide you a monthly breakdown of the hours they put in or the services they provide, or is it just straight fee for regardless if they do anything or don't do anything?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Representative, it's a straight fee retainer-based contract.
Not a bad deal if you can get it. Okay. Well, we appreciate it. So thank you very much.
Thank you for listening.
Okay. Next is Geological Survey. We're gaining about 8 minutes per agency here now. Our one, we went a little over on revenue. Okay. Please introduce yourself.
Well, I hope, Mr. Chairman, we can continue that trend.
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
My name is Tom Green. I'm the state geologist as well as the director of the Geologic Survey.
Great. Welcome.
Thank you.
Just take us through your budget. You have a couple positions, I think, in yours.
That's correct. It's really quite simple and straightforward. And really what I'm going to discuss briefly with you today is the 8% reduction, which is two positions, two geoscientists. And then the IT consolidation, the reduction in our budget due to that, which is also two individuals. So let me talk about the two geoscientists. It's fortuitous that when I came on board, which was essentially a year ago, I was going through a reorganization of the Geologic Survey. And it turns out that the budget cut initiative was taking place at about the same time, so it was opportune for me to make the decisions as to where those cuts would take place. It turns out in the Geologic Survey that 90% of the budget is personnel. So if you're going to cut 8%, you're going to have to take it out of personnel. These were two positions I will say I would have filled had it not been for the budget cuts. We did have to make some tough cuts or tough decisions. The decision that we made was to focus on those areas that we felt were of the greatest, had the greatest impact on the state of Wyoming, that being oil, gas, trona, coal, etc. What we decided that would have to take a bit of a back seat would be in the areas of geologic hazards and water. My concerns in that area is people don't really put a lot of energy into geologic hazards until one occurs. And then there tends to be a lot of energy about a significant landslide or earthquake, et cetera. But we'll have to cover those as they hopefully don't occur. The probably the more significant area is water. And I believe that water issues in the state of Wyoming are going to become more and more important, especially subsurface water issues such as Pavilion. There's a tremendous amount of geologic input that goes into that. What we are going to have to do, and I think it's the appropriate thing to do, and I think we can do a better job of it, is interagency cooperation, such that the Geologic Survey doesn't have to do it all, or another agency doesn't have to do it all. I think we could, by pooling some of our resources, perhaps we can cut down on some of the work that we would do, and that's our intention there. These positions are not filled now, so actually it has a positive impact on 2013 as well as it will 2014. And we'll have to look at those positions moving forward and see actually what we're missing and what the takeaway is by not having those positions in the next biennial budget.
Okay.
On the IT consolidation, quite simple as well. Two, it affects two individuals. It has not had a negative impact on the survey. I think it's actually ended up being a bit of a win-win in that we've been able to retain the individuals in our office. Therefore, really, we haven't seen much of an impact there. But Where we've been able to leverage these people is they've actually been able to serve the needs of some other agencies that do not have IT support in the Laramie and other areas. So it actually turns out that we can retain our needs being met, and I think it actually helps helps the state overall by being able to use these individuals to help with some very small agencies that wouldn't have IT support otherwise.
Okay.
And that's really the extent of our cuts are in those two areas.
Yes. Any questions, Committee? Representative Stepson.
Mr. Chairman, and maybe Don may have input on this, but I notice in those two positions you've got it effective as of July 1st, 2012, but its reference is only for a 12-month period, and I was wondering why that wasn't for a 24-month period if that's the start point for if they were vacant and that's the start point.
Well, I think the 8% request was just to represent the impact on 2014, but certainly 2013, those positions are gone.
Mr. Chairman, if I can just ask Don, I mean, is that reflected? Is both years of that reflected in the numbers that we have here?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stepson, only 1 year is reflected in the budget cut numbers. So this is kind of the reverse of the situation you've had with other agencies. I'm not saying either one is good or bad, because in this case, the state survey will benefit from savings in FY13 that they are not required to give back. On the other hand, their cuts are sustainable and recurring and biennializable. So I'm not saying any approach is, it's just different.
Questions,
Mr. Coach. Mr.
Chair, a quick one. Yeah, on the where your offices are, where you're located and working out of, there have been some issues in the past. Could you give me a quick update on that?
Well, preceding my coming here, there was some discussion on the possibility of moving the geologic survey. I put together a cost estimate for that, and an impact statement that was turned in. And as far as I know, any initiative to move the survey has not been reconsidered since that point.
And Mr. Cocher, you're still in the same spot then at the university, correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
And the other thing too, you've done some things I think has been very helpful to the oil and gas and other mineral industries in our state. I know you put out a map and some other things, so that's what it's really intended to do, and that's good.
Yeah, I will say that just to give you, for instance, it's our biggest selling item, and we now have it online. And what we found is that a significant number of people access that information online.
What I'd like to see, Mr. Co-Chair, is you know, we do a bunch in oil and gas. I'd see some of the non-coal, you know, like the precious metals, the rare earths, the gold, silver. I know you're thinking about that because there's still a lot of potential in our state for those various minerals too. And so any kind of help there, if you look forward, would help our state.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And one thing we do have is we do have maps on those various resources, and we are in the process of completing a rare earth study for the state of Wyoming. That will be completed in June of this year.
Okay.
And then we'll have a better understanding of what rare earth potential will be across state.
Right. Okay. I think Representative Burkhardt, I think we'll close it out. Microphone, please.
I thought I hit it. Tom, I think the survey has stopped printing some of their publications that have historically printed. Are you taking credit for any of that in the budget cuts, or do you plan to go back in and reprint a number of those publications?
Well, we print on demand. We try to keep our inventory essentially as low as possible. We do get a tremendous amount of requests from people that come in looking for information, and that's the way we've handled it. But what we're seeing, and I think it's a trend, and I think it's a trend that's going to continue, is people access more information online than they do hard copy maps, and I think that's a trend that's going to continue, and that's what we're trying to move towards as well. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Mr. K. King, welcome. And
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, and we'll. You've got. I don't know that you have many any budget. Is it all ETS in your budget changes? ETS transfers. Go ahead and introduce yourself. Yes, take us through your reductions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Bob King. I'm the interim supervisor of the Wyoming Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. And you are correct. Just in case there are anybody on your committee who's unfamiliar with how we're funded, we are not funded out of the general fund. We're funded primarily through a conservation tax that's placed on oil and gas production in the state. We also receive funds from permit fees, hearings fees, and some funds from the federal government for our underground injection control program. But we have no dollars from the general fund. We do have in our budget supplemental budget about $170,000 that is impacted from the transfer of our IT personnel to the ETS department. But it's a trade-off. It didn't impact our budget. It just reallocates funds within there because, as I understand the process, now we will pay ETS, or they will be paid through ETS, and then ETS will bill us for their service, so it'll be a trade-off.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Just probably most people on the committee are familiar with that, but it's a conservation fund, and it's set not to exceed by the legislature statutorily. And then the commission makes a determination based on your budgets at what level to tax the producers of our state. And then there's a little, you have a little surplus there to allow you to operate. Would that be a fair assessment of how it comes in, Bob?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, that is correct. The by statute, the Oil and Gas Commission is authorized to set the mill levy up to 8/10 of a mill. We currently are running at 4/10 of a mill, so half of what we are allowed to charge, if you will. And out of those funds, we account for our orphan wells, plugging of orphan wells that we don't have sufficient bonding for, and any other costs that come into the commission.
Mr. Co-Chair, on the orphan wells, that was my next question. What do you have? And I know you have a fund. What's the amount of that? And what did you expend like last year, the last calendar year in that area? And what do you see out there? Just a swag as to some kind of exposure we might have.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, what I hope is in front of you are some of the Series 900 numbers that we did submit to the committee. Our fiscal year 11 and 12. Our total was $1.6 million in Series 900 dollars, and of that, approximately $1.37 million was for plugging of orphan wells. And again, just to define orphan wells for those who may not be familiar with it, any idle well in the state, an idle well being a well that's not producing, is we bond the operator. We have an idle well bonding amount that we actually set after consultations with the operator. If for some reason that bonding level is insufficient to cover the well, if that operator were to go out of business, leave the state or whatever, or renege on their responsibilities to plug their wells, then those revert to the state, and then we would pull their bond. If that bonding amount is not enough to cover the amount of idle well plugging responsibility that we have, then those funds are taken out of our orphan wells. And we're requesting $2 million, that is in our budget for $2 million for our orphan well fund. That's what we try to maintain.
Senator Meyer.
On our orphan wells, I recall a couple years ago we gave you $1 million because you didn't, from general funds, because you didn't have enough money in your fund to pay for the orphan wells that needed to be plugged. Do you recall anything about that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, I don't recall the specifics of it. I was aware of it. That was I was not part of the commission at that time, but I was aware that those funds were requested because of some extraordinary plugging expenses that the commission was faced with, but I do not know the details of them. I could look into it and get you some more information on it, but I don't have the details in front of me right now.
Yeah, because I'm just kind of concerned that you're only doing four mills when I know that there are some operators that basically there's some wells that were sold two or three or four times. Liability didn't pass through with the ownership. The commission dropped the ball and didn't get that paperwork done as far as the liability being transferred, and the state ended up with the liability, and the general fund covered it. So that's what I recall happened. So I'm just, if we could get a kind of a recap of that whole event process and how many general funds actually went into it, I'd be interested to know that. Then I have another kind of a question that may or may not be in your line. On pipelines, when you have a leak, does that go through the Oil and Gas Commission? Is there a bonding requirement or an insurance requirement on pipelines that spring a leak and cause damage, or how is that structured, if you know, if it's under your shop or direct me to where I could ask that question?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, that is not under the jurisdiction of the Oil and Gas Commission. If it were a pipeline leak that were off the lease premises, then we have no regulatory authority over that situation.
Any idea who has the regulatory authority on that? Eli knows. I'll ask him. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Well, for the interstate pipes, it's a PSC, and they've got the safety. And for intra, it's a FERC issue. And that's pretty much how it works. Then you have your products line that are intrastate, and I'm not sure on the products line, but I'm talking about oil lines and then natural gas pipes. To monitor through the PSC, they've got the intrastate lines.
And Mr. Chairman, and also Senator Meyer, to partially answer your previous question on the plugging of the wells and the bonding. The Oil and Gas Commission currently is holding about $94 million in idle well bonds, and we've tried to beef up that program and cover ourselves for that possibility of operators leaving by monitoring those idle wells closer, the transfers of ownership of those wells to make sure that we feel we're covered on that. We can't get them all. Where the weak point in the system is if a well is operating at the time that it's transferred from one operator to another, then we don't require a bond on that, an idle well bond, because the well's producing. If a new operator then elects to shut that well in because of it being uneconomic or whatever, then it becomes an idle well. And if they bail on us before we have an idle well meeting with them, then that well is not, that well or those set of wells aren't adequately covered in the bonding process that we have right now. And that's one of the areas that we're trying to firm up a little bit and stay on a little closer connection with, to make sure that we don't have a severe lag time where a well can be transferred and then shut in and then not have a proper idle well bond filed with the state. And again, I'd also emphasize that the wells that we're responsible for in terms of the idle wells are state and fee. We have no authority or to plug the federal wells.
I guess I might suggest is that when the well starts pumping, you require the bond, and the bond's not released until it's replaced by the subsequent owner. Then you got your money up front.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, that would certainly be a situation that we would be out there. We do require an operator bond, either a per-well bond or a blanket bond, depending on how many wells and what the operator elects to do. It's their choice as to whether or not they file that. Quite frankly, a blanket bond, statewide blanket bond, is often not anywhere near enough to cover all of the wells that they operate. An Anadarko or BP or some of the larger companies would have thousands of wells, and so that's why we've set up the blanket bond. But that would be something that we could certainly look at.
Yeah, because we got in this trouble with the Grain Warehouse Act, where the bond was jerked before the department found out that the inventory was gone in the warehouse, and the guy sold the inventory and didn't necessarily pay the producers. So, you know, I get if you get ahead of the game, then it doesn't make any difference as long as you've got the money. So,
again, Mr. Chairman and Senator Meyer, one of the issues that we constantly wrestle with is how much do we want to bond operators who are basically playing by the rules to penalize the handful of operators that for whatever reason, either through their own negligence or bad luck or whatever, are unable to perform and live up to the expectations and the conditions of our rules and regulations, but we're constantly wrestling with that issue.
I think that about wraps it up. Are there any other issues? Appreciate your travel here today and all the good information, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Everybody good? You know, we're good. Okay, next, Department of Agriculture. Are we, they're outside? Okay, Mr. Director, we're getting closer to getting back on time. We gained a little there. Appreciate your patience. If you could introduce the folks, your staff, and take us through your budget reductions. You have a few issues.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jason Furnio. I'm the director of the Wyoming Department of Agriculture. With me today is our deputy director, Doug Miyamoto, and our chief administrative officer is Julie Cook, who is with me today. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. With your permission, I'll just jump right in. I believe you have our handouts. The budget for the Wyoming Department of Agriculture that is before you today does represent the 8% cuts that were requested of us. And with those cuts, if I could just take a moment, our original appropriated budget was $39.66 million. Our cuts total $1.185 million. And we also have a reduction for ETS of $159,812, and that gives us the budget that's before you today of 38.32. In going through the process, we looked at our programs in depth and strategically. We included our divisions in these discussions to make sure that we had a very strategic approach in this, and that we had that we could present the best agency under this scenario for you today. It does not represent, in all cases, a biennialized cut, and we are aware of that. But through this process that we have looked at, we do have a roadmap forward, just so you're aware that we did not just blow that off, so to speak. We did look at what would happen if we were being asked to reduce further down the road. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I can go through our separate cuts, or I can open it to you for questions, if you want to guide me.
I think just take us right down page by page. Let us know where you're at, if you're going to go page, or if you want to use the summary page in the budget.
Mr. Chairman, if we could start with the summary page, okay. that would be wonderful. If we have this, I'm working off of this document here that's titled Supplemental Budget Request, Wyoming Department of Agriculture. Our administration.
So just to make sure we're all clear, this is a handout.
Then, it is.
And it's handout 122. Is that what I'm looking at?
Yes, sir.
I believe so. Okay.
The first line on there, it says page number 11, administration. Chairman Harshman, making sure we're all right. Under this proposed cut, we're looking at $28,700 in administration that would be supportive expenditures. These are typical day-to-day type things that we are looking at, including travel, those types of things that we have reduced in administration. The next line is one of those that would probably not be a biennialized cut. That is a elimination of the grasshopper research funding. This is not our main grasshopper program, just to be clear. This is a research component on grasshoppers in a program with University of Wyoming.
Representative Moniz.
Jason, could you explain to us exactly what they do in that research program on grasshoppers?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Moniz, this program looks at, the efficacies of new products that would work on grasshoppers. There's a larger pot of money here that is not with us, is my understanding. There's some federal money that is involved, university money to look at that. Our portion of that was dealing, I believe, mostly with travel and administrative type things. So it's looking at efficacies of new products. Is that
Senator Meyer.
Yeah. And it also it's different types of application as far as like skip spraying and things like that and rates and just how to get the biggest bang for the buck in controlling grasshoppers and some biological controls and all kinds of different ways of an integrated pest management system.
So. Okay. All right. Thank you, Senator. Okay. The next one on the list is the Board of Agriculture. We were looking at $2,600, and this is just travel expenditures for the board. Following is the brucellosis task force. There's a $10,000 reduction there on board travel expenditures we have. I don't have that number right at my fingertips, but we have around $40,000, I believe, to help the brucellosis task force get to do their job. So that's what that represents. The following one is the elimination of the pesticide disposal program at $62,500.
Senator Meyer.
This one I'm kind of bewildered about because when that was originally set up, it was set up with special revenue funds, which was the fees that companies who sell pesticides in the state are charged for their products, and it was a special revenue fund set up for the pesticide elimination program. So I'm kind of wondering in the history of things how they got switched over the general fund and why it isn't a special revenue and essentially off the table.
Director?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, if I could direct you down to almost the bottom one, line 48, I believe that is the one that you're actually referring to, which is our special revenue. This does come from pesticide applications or pesticide registration. I believe that's the one that you're talking about, Senator. Mm-hmm. I don't know that this happened, I believe, before I was here on the history of switching it over to the general fund. As we look at it in our budget, it certainly is a general fund budget that we deal with, but you are right. The monies do come in on that one from those product registrations. I have been approached in full disclosure by members of that world that are not the happiest with us looking at that cut either. I guess from our standpoint, it's a revenue stream that we had to look at touching. So that's where we came from. I don't know the history of how it got from where it is into our just general fund budget.
Mr. Chairman, these things were set up, and I think the originally was pretty much a self-funded program with a special revenue, and pesticide elimination was one, and that's a program where a lot of it's not so much for agriculture but for your cities and towns, and you probably have seen that pesticide day when you got something underneath your sink and you don't know what it is, you take it to a location, and rather than pouring it down the sink and ended up in the water supply, it ends up in a disposal truck. Hmm. And these things, I'd say that necessarily we need to have at least one of these once every 2 years. You may not be able to, you might be able to eliminate it 1 year, but at least every other couple of years, you almost have to have these type of things. So they get built up, and they do end up down in the water, floating in the Platte River, and your fish are belly up, and the ducks.
Sounds like you're working on an amendment.
Well, no, I'm just saying that I've probably heard from the same people that the director has, and you know, basically, I was on the Ag Committee when we did that, so
sure.
I've got a pretty good idea what happened on this one here. But the question, I guess, I'll have a question when we get down to that one there, and a little bit further.
Appreciate it,
Mr. Chairman. If I can now readdress the one that we were on, Senator, our understanding is that this has been kind of built as a three-legged stool, and certainly we are proposing here to take out one of those legs. But we do have some county monies and some municipality monies to affect that. But certainly it is taking away that portion. So,
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Moniz.
Jason, would you explain the program? I think we've heard from Senator Meyer, but could you explain to us exactly what the program involves and what we'll be eliminating by eliminating this program?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Moniz, Senator Meyer did a very good job of explaining it. Basically, what that money is there for, again, we are on the page 19 pesticide disposal program, is it provides money to take in, old chemicals, those things that people cannot dispose of in a safe manner on their own. It provides local governments the opportunity to help collect those things and dispose of them in a safe manner. Is that's a fair representation, Senator? It's so basically pesticides, herbicides, fuels, those types of things to take them in and dispose of them.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman. Is that based on a grant funding program, or is it equally distributed throughout the counties? How is it distributed?
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, this is a grant-funded program. We do have some funding mechanisms with weed and pest that are the same across the board. This one is under a grant program.
So how many counties and municipalities are applying for the grant? Not a huge sum.
It is not. Mr. Chairman, I don't have that number off the top of my head. I can get it for you. With the average $2,000 a grant, probably, is what. So, we're talking eight or nine counties here that are applying for that.
Mr. Chairman, one more.
Yeah, please. Sorry to interrupt your mojo.
That's not right. Jason, does the state then dispose of the disposals that the cities and the counties dispose of, or are the cities and counties responsible for the disposal of it once they receive it, their landfills or wherever they receive it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Moniz, it's a program that we deal with the local landfill, but the players are really the weed and pest districts, typically, and then that local municipality, so that they have the expertise and the ability to treat that however it needs to be treated, but it is working with a local landfill. We don't have a facility at the state where we're taking these things, if that makes sense.
Good. Okay. Anyone else? Okay, please continue.
Okay. The next one we have on page 22, if you're following our consumer health services, we are proposing reducing $79,000 in daily supportive expenditures, administrative-type expenditures. Technical services on page 25, a similar reduction at the tune of $82,724. And analytical services, which is our lab in Laramie. This is our biology and chemistry lab in Laramie. We are reducing daily supportive services at $24,800. The next one is the seed lab, and that is the seed lab in Powell. We are reducing $18,000 flow-through funds for the University of Wyoming, and that goes directly to that seed lab.
Well, on the seed lab there, you're saying that somebody will come in with a sample and pay you, and you just won't pay the university for the work they've done? Is that what I'm getting? How's that going to work?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, no. We have flow-through money that is general fund money that comes to us. It goes directly to you. That represents just 8% reduction on that money. Does that make sense? It is not money coming in from individuals. It's money coming from the general fund, flowing through the Department of Agriculture budget to the University of Wyoming Seed Lab.
But there's still a special revenue account for the cost of the what the grower pays for the analysis?
Mr. Chairman, not that operates through our budget, Senator.
Okay, so it's a direct payment to the UWC lab then?
And then it goes to the general fund, is my understanding. So how that check is written, I would have to look. But the money is designed to go directly to the general fund.
We always wrote it to the Crop Improvement Association. But that was a while ago.
Yeah.
Okay, that's from the table then, maybe.
Write it to you.
Okay. You were on the mic when you said that. Would
yeah,
you
I know.
Repeat that a little? No.
It's been a while since I've raised seed, but we always used to do it to the Crop Improvement Association. So.
Okay. Any other questions while we're on that? Diligently writing notes, and you'll get back to us, I'm sure, with a short one pager of all these questions we have. Good. Okay,
absolutely,
continue.
Mr. Chairman. If I haven't lost my place, I think 32, we're looking at the Animal Damage Management Board rabies program. This is a proposed $32,000 reduction. This is a grant program that is specific to rabies. That fund historically has benefited a very small number of counties. There's still money in there. We're not eliminating, just reducing. But it certainly affects Sheridan and Johnson and Campbell counties probably at a greater rate than others. The next one is our rodent and predator fund, and we're looking to eliminate the non-predator program, which is at $15,041.
President Wallace has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On both of these, I'm curious that you mentioned that it benefits just on the first one, just those three counties. Why is that? Is that because those are the only three counties that applied? Because those are the only three counties that have a rabies problem?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Representative Wallace, it is historically, it is not limited to those counties. Typically, they are the ones that apply. And what ends up happening, just as a quick background, and I'm trying to keep time in mind here for you, but when we meet as our regular ADMB meetings, we have our normal predator pot of money, and then we have these little special pots of money. Those pots of money are for typically skunks, obviously bats, those types of things. And it is Campbell County, Johnson County, and Sheridan County are the ones that have traditionally applied for that specific pot of money. This last year, we did have some money left over where we had the skunk problem here in Laramie County that we were able to help out just a little bit with some education. It's a pretty small pool of money to deal with. It's mostly education and some skunk trapping is what we're doing.
Mr. Chairman, you said you were reducing it. How much is left in that fund?
About $130,000, Julie tells me. So.
Are you on the previous one?
Is that?
I think he was talking about rabies.
Is that in the rabies fund, correct?
Yeah.
And then on the rodent and predator, I assume the $15,000 was the rodent piece of that?
Preferably, yes. That's where we're looking. We are eliminating the non-predator side of that program. So.
And is that eliminating the rodent piece, or is that just reducing it? And if so, is there what's the amount left there?
Yeah, an amount there, Julie.
The whole thing's about 45, isn't it? 1,000.
Yeah. That sounds right.
Chairman, in that one, we're eliminating all of the general fund, and the only other money we would have would be any money that we receive from rodent sales, like signs and different things like that. So this will basically just be a flow-through account for different supplies that people buy from us to take care of these issues. Does that help?
Good.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Senator Perkins.
In that program, is prairie dog eradication, is that under that program on the rodent side?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, it certainly could be. Off the top of my head, I cannot recall somebody applying specifically for prairie dog management out of those funds, but that doesn't mean it hasn't happened. Doug, have you?
No.
Okay. It would be possible to come out of there.
follow up, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
So what does it apply to, Jason, then, as far as non-rodent? I mean, as non-predator. What are we talking about there?
It's similar to the rabies, but without the rabies component. We deal a lot with bats and some other, you know, skunks, those types of things, through that money, too. The next one, page 36, we have our grain warehouse program. We are looking to reduce our travel out of here at $4,000. This is a small budget for us and a fairly tight one, but our grain warehouse person feels they can get that job done and reduce their travel costs. With
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Meyer.
Yeah. Grain warehouse is, I guess, near and dear to our hearts in Goshen County for a number of reasons. What is that percentage reduction in travel? Is it 20%, 50%? I just need to be assured that the person is going to be able to do the necessary inspections to make sure that the commodities are indeed in the warehouses.
Mr. Chairman, it's a 13%. Am I reading that right, Julie? 13% roughly reduction. In that, and of course, our grain warehouse person is in Goshen County, which certainly helps that, that's where a bunch of our, obviously, a lot of his work is. So it does help that.
Thank you.
Okay. Good.
The next one, page 38, Animal Damage Management Board. We are looking at $10,000. Reduction in grant funding. Page 41.
Representative Wallace has a question.
Yeah, just really quick. What is typically what were those grants paying for out of that particular line item on the animal damage?
Okay. On these, this is our coming out of our larger pool of money now for animal damage management. And then you'll see another one down there that is predator management as well. We have this section, I believe, is dealing with more of the research component. When we have ADMB, we have two things. We have actual predator work on the ground, and then we do fund some predator work, which is research on methods with coyote removal or breeding programs, that kind of thing. Some of them get fairly interesting. So this smaller part is out of the research portion.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're sitting here giggling. I just have, when you mentioned all these rodents and predators, reminding us all of our childhood, I think. It's funny any are left, but... I think I turned the mic off when I said that.
Mr. Chairman, you didn't know you could get paid to remove them? Is that what there. Just for clarification, this would be out of line on the page 51, but we do not fund bounty programs out of this predator money. There are some counties that do, however, out of their own pots. Page 41, we are looking at our natural resources section, and this is a reduction of $96,980 out of supportive services and some grant funding. Those just to touch on those, we do run Ag in the Classroom money out of this budget, and then conservation districts. We have the total for them, Wyoming Ag in the Classroom, is being proposed to be reduced at $4,860 total, and conservation districts would be reduced at $27,805. We have worked very closely with both those organizations to come to that figure. Page 45.
Mr. Co-Chair, and I think it's under this one, Jason, but the we get a monthly report of work that you're doing on various impacts of federal issues in our various our Senate districts, and you sent out a report that, this lists the things that you might be aware of as a, as an elected official. Is that the natural resources account where that's conducted out of and handled budgetarily?
Co-Chairman Bebout, yes, it is. That is where that comes out of. That organization works mostly on federal issues, but dealing with how they interface with agriculture and conservation.
And, Mr. Co-Chair, that's pretty important, and I know you're looking at reductions. And what's the we're still going to be able to do that. You're just going to – what are you going to do? You're still going to do the involvement and looking. What's this – what does it mean when you take $100,000 out of a worthwhile program like that? What's it going to do to it?
Mr. Chairman, Co-Chairman Bebout, it's not easy, and I don't want to give that impression. We feel that we can do our job with this proposed cut. $100,000, a lot of our expenditures in there truthfully comes from travel. And, the work that those people do out on the ground with, not just with local ranchers, but also with federal agencies at their local field offices. So certainly we can do our job taking that $100,000. We're comfortable with that.
Okay.
The next one is on page 45, emergency insect. We are looking at reducing $174,900.
Mr. Chairman?
It's only Goshen and Fremont.
Jason, does this affect the grasshopper program, grant funding the grasshopper program?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Moniz, potentially down the line it could. There is still about $2.3 million in the emergency insect account. We feel that we can do our day-to-day operations here with this reduction. In the past, where we have gotten into major issues with grasshoppers or the last few years with the beetle, our appropriation wouldn't cover those things anywhere. Anyway, where we've gotten to that, we have had local governments and legislators sit down with us and work. I think, I don't have the off the top of my head, Doug might be able to help me, but the last time we had that real bad grasshopper outbreak, we had some money that we were able to work with, but the legislature also helped with that with a one-time appropriation. And so I'm not trying to put it in the back of your mind that we want to come back next time, but truthfully that's how I would prefer to operate, is if there is... we can do our day-to-day work, but if there's an emergency, I would rather not just have a pot of money sitting here, sitting there. I would rather work with you folks if that's at all possible, and that's how it's worked in the past.
Okay.
On page 48, the pesticide registration program, looking at reducing this at $306,568.
Senator Meyer. Yeah, can we flesh that out a little bit there? It's basically reduce available grant funding. Can you tell us who the grants go to, what they're used for?
Do we have a list of the counties that do qualify for these, Julie? We have one available at the department. Mr. Chairman, if I could, this is one where not everybody qualifies for, and I don't have that, and I apologize, Senator, for not bringing it over, but if I could get that to you so that you have a good understanding, and I'm not misstating where it's all going, are you okay if I get that to you?
Yeah, I'm fine. In fact, we've got kind of a little information thing here on the right that gives us a snapshot of what these things are, but, if you could take a look and give us a one- or two-page thing about some of these things or what the grants are, some of the questions, maybe summarize some of the questions that were asked and answered here so we have that in a form that's, if we have questions, we can be readily available to with the answers for them. Thank you.
Yes.
Responsive. Thank you.
Jason, again, is this basically affecting the weed and pest on on mosquito program, or is it involving more than that?
Mr. Chairman, it could involve more than that. And I can include that on the one-page or two-page summary as well. This can be used for, you know, invasive species type stuff, a lot of weed issues here. You know, typically when we're talking invasive species, that's what we're doing. So it would include what you just brought up with mosquitoes, but it has some invasive component to it as well, Representative.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman. So are we talking basically weed and pest grant funding here, or is it more than that?
Mr. Chairman, this does work with the weed and pests. So, and to get to the question earlier that Senator Meyer asked, this is the pot of money that is produced from pesticide registration. It's a self-imposed fee, if it were. Okay. Line 51, or page 51, excuse me, we are proposing to reduce our predator management by $207,200, and that is partly from daily supportive expenditures and then also grant funding.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry about that. Jason, is this again going to the predator the local county predator management boards? Is that a reduction to what you're giving back to them?
It is. It's reducing the amount of dollars that are available for predator control on livestock, and those work through the predator boards, the ones that the magic number escapes me. I think there's, how many of them are there, 20 that work with us, 19 or 20 that work with us. So it is a reduction in that of that. In that appropriation, we are still looking at $5,855,000 for the biennium. On top of that, not to muddy the waters, but for this next year, we have $200,000 for wolves?
Yes.
$200,000 that the legislature gave us for this time around to see what it's going to cost us to help remove wolves. There's no livestock indemnity payment in that. It is what that money is to be used for is if we're out of the trophy area in the predator area, we get a pack of wolves that's camped on Representative Wallace's place and causing trouble, that we can have some money to go in and get that. I mean, that's the idea behind there.
Mr. Chairman, follow up again. Jason, since you brought up wolves, we also heard the comment from the Game and Fish on their area of the management of wolves. How does your department interact with the Game and Fish in this area?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Moniz, Director Talbot and I co-chair the Animal Damage Management Board. The Game and Fish does not have authority over predators. Predators fall under our programs, and authority is a little bit tough word for us for what we have over those animals, but we work with them. So we work very closely on something like wolves. We are running this money. The money has come to the Department of Agriculture and the Animal Damage Management Board. So that, not only do we work with the Game and Fish on how these monies and these wolf monies as well as these predator monies are expended, there's a statewide board that helps determine how that money goes out. So we work very closely with them, and I feel we have a very good working relationship with the Game and Fish Department.
Do you have any open positions, and if so, how long have they been open?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, we currently have one open position. It's within our Consumer Health Services Division. That actually has been offered, the position has been offered this week. So it has not been open. I believe it's been open less than a month, or right at, maybe 5 weeks at the most. So we do currently have one that is in the offering stage.
Oh, you're offering for a budget cut? Is that what you're saying?
Don, is there we look at this biennialization issue on cuts. Any comments on that? Or,
Mr. Chairman, I was fortunate enough to attend the agriculture meeting this summer with them, so I've discussed, and I think they're aware of the sundry list of supplies and travel where they cannot biennialize their cuts. In addition to that, there are three big programs, the three programs that they eliminated the pesticide program that we talked about first, not the registration, the rodent program, and the grasshopper research component. All of those have essentially been zeroed out. So they will have to find another area to double their cuts, essentially, for 15-16.
Okay, so as I look at the information you hand, this is one pager, it looks like a little less than most of their cuts can be biennialized. Am I reading that right? Except for about $158,000 in your estimate.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. That's my estimate. And when I say it can be biennialized, meaning the funds are there, whether or not it's appropriate to, cut those programs further is not my comment.
Sure, fair enough. Okay. Any other questions, Senator Meyer?
And Don, I just want to kind of understand this, especially in the pesticide registration. Now, is that money going, those registration fees going directly to the Department of Agriculture, or is that a general fund figure that's going to the general to the Department of Agriculture? I want to find out what that flow is on that pesticide registration, because I had thought we set it up that it went to them, and these folks were just a custodian of the grant process.
Does someone here have the answer to that question?
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, Julie Cook. The money is sent into the Department of Agriculture for the actual registration. We then deposit it directly into the general fund. Through the budget appropriation process that was set up when this program was set up, we are appropriated X dollars of how much of that we are allowed to appropriate out for this program. So the full amount is put into the general fund, and we're only appropriated one portion of that for us to spend on this grant program. Does that answer your question, Mr. Chairman?
I think it probably does, but yeah. I think how much is deposited is probably the piece we're missing. Is that right, Senator?
Well, that's one of the pieces, but I'm trying to figure out how that could be biannualized, because it essentially you are allowed to keep a percentage of that pesticide registration fees for a specific purpose. And you're no longer doing it for the specific purpose. So I really don't see where you'd have the authority if you're not doing what you were statutorily committed to do, that you could continue to biannualize that $306,000, that it would just directly go to the general fund, and you'd never get your hands on it because you've said that you're not going to spend it in the way that the statute told you to. That's, I guess if you're looking at it biannualizing, I don't think you could count that. And Don, I guess I don't follow my reasoning and see if there's any.
How about, can the department respond to that? I mean, that's a fair question. That maybe lighten us up on that a little. What are your statute, restrictions on that?
Mr. Chairman, the funding prior to this program being established, we were already collecting a pesticide registration fee prior to this program being established. And when they wanted to establish this program, the legislation was written so that we could just divert some of that funding into this program for that. So I don't believe that we would not be allowed. I'm not an attorney, and I don't have all of the statutes in front of me. We would still be allowed to collect the full registration fee for the general fund purposes. But however, with this program here, As Mr. Richards had said from LSO, it doesn't, just because we have the ability to biennialize this type of cut, it doesn't mean that that's the direction that we as a department would go.
Sure. Okay. Senator Meyer, if you have some more, maybe you can get more specific questions and delve into that and then report back to the committee. I think we've about wrapped it. Are there any other comments?
Mr. Chairman, just thank you for the opportunity to be here today and discuss these with you. That is all that we have. Unless there are any other questions, we're happy to answer them, and we will get you that information back that we committed to.
Well, I appreciate the good work. And appreciate the good work, and thank you. Okay, next up is the Livestock Board. How about while they're changing seats, we can all stand up, seventh inning stretch. I don't think we want to take a break. Yeah. Okay, Director, if you want to introduce yourself and your team, and we'll get started. You have a pretty... folks, I think there's another handout that will be circulated, a little more breakdown from counties, and so that will be coming. You'll see that on your desk. It'll be coming here in a bit. So go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Leanne Carell. I'm Director of the Wyoming Livestock Board, and I have with me here today also Dr. Logan, who is the state veterinarian under the Livestock Board. Well, thank you for the opportunity to be here today. Ours, I think, are fairly straightforward, so hopefully we'll get you out of here very shortly and keep you moving.
And hopefully we'll get you out of here shortly.
Okay. But I would be happy to answer any questions to clarify anything in our budget. That's not a problem. Starting out on page 3 of our budget proposal, just to kind of give some background and things, the Livestock Board oversees this budget, and if you look at the sources of funding, we have 47% of our funding actually comes from the general fund. We have 2.5% of our funding that comes from the federal funds, and then other funds for the total of 50.44%. And those are specifically producer-generated dollars that come in for brand inspections, for permits through our brand program, and that is an earmarked fund that is managed separately, but it is included in our budget. So as we go through here, there are some adjustments where we're specifically taking cuts to our general portion of the fund, but it does have impacts then broader to that earmarked portion of our fund.
Okay.
If you look down at the number of authorized employees, we have 20 authorized employees full-time, and then we have our AWAC employees, mm-hmm. and those at-will employment contract are our brand inspectors for the most part. We have one additional at-will employment contract person. But yeah, of that, 92 of those are brand inspectors. Those brand inspectors are scattered throughout the state and provide the services for us. 60 of those positions are full-time positions, and another 32 of those positions are part-time positions. So that's the breakdown in our agency right now. Moving on to page 8. Is a breakdown of what our proposed cuts are. And these cuts are as follows. They were pretty simple. We have the number one being the board travel and salary for $23,000. We are looking at $16,000 of that from salaries and $7,000 from travel. We looked at the history of what we've been reverting from those. With today's technologies, we're able to do more conference calls, video conferencing, those types of things in order to accomplish the same types of things, looking at efficiencies there. The next one's contract services. We are looking at reducing contract services by $55,832. Our number three is the
Mr.
excess.
Chairman? Sorry to interrupt.
Representative Moniz, no, please do.
Could you give us a break or just an overview of the types of contract services you think you perform in that area?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Moniz, yes, the types of contract services that we provide, the things that we were looking at here, we were using that contract services dollars to hire a summer intern, and that's one of the positions we're cutting. We were at the time when, right prior to my tenure with the department, we were actually hiring somebody in that contract services to provide receptions services and that reception function. We also, the lion's share of that goes to veterinary services for contract services that way, for different service things within the veterinary, whether it be brucellosis, whether it be other assistance in veterinary, depending on disease outbreaks that we have.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman. So just exactly what do when you do your contract veterinary services, what do they do that Dr. Logan couldn't perform?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Moniz, we utilized actually two contract veterinarians. They help us with trichomoniasis epidemiology. We have used them to help with brucellosis testing. We have used them to help with, in fact, with some of our grant applications, testing for avian influenza, again, testing for brucellosis and other epidemiology work. Also work with the Scrapie grant in doing some of the surveys and some of our tag retention studies, that type of thing.
Just one more, Mr. Chairman. So, Dr. Logan, will you pick up the slack in that area there?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Moniz, yes, my staff, which currently actually just consists of the state veterinarian and the assistant state veterinarian, have picked up that slack. We do currently have one contract veterinarian who is doing a lot of trichomoniasis epidemiology work. We usually have a field veterinarian, full-time benefited position. That was vacated. The person resigned to take another job on November 1st, and we're in the process of getting all of the paperwork through the process, and we've actually delayed that just a bit to try to save a little bit of funds to compensate for the payout when he left. But we hope to have that filled sometime this coming spring, and we'll advertise it probably about the middle of February. Once he's back, once we've got that position filled, I should say, that will ease some of the burden on the current staffing.
Okay, the next one that we had on here was in the 300 is excess for testing reimbursement. And this is a reduction to the brucellosis testing program of $223,525. And this piece of this basically is we're looking at what we have been reverting over the past bienniums. And in doing so, here again, as an emergency fund, we never know what we're going to have in there. And so we're going to be optimistic in it. If we have cases of brucellosis not elevated above the levels that we've had the last two bienniums, we should have appropriate level of funding and be able to conduct our normal surveillance activities. We would only have an issue if we ended up with way greater levels of brucellosis outbreaks, and of course those we never know, and that would may pose us a problem, and we may have to look at what we would be able to do and provide for brucellosis reimbursements. There's also currently in this biennium, in the governor's budget, he had asked last year for this 13-14 biennium, the $500,000 for brucellosis, kind of a rainy day account, and that resides in the auditor's office. So we feel confident in this biennium, at least, with that funding there, we would be able to go way well above the levels of brucellosis that, outbreaks that we have currently.
You said we're auditors.
Mr. Chairman, yes. Currently, we are also doing some adult vaccination with that brucellosis surveillance and testing, trying to for containment of that disease. And so we're doing some additional adult vaccination, paying for some help on that, also some spaying in very specific cases. And so we may have to look into those. So we do have some contingency ways if we would have a major outbreak of brucellosis. Okay, the last one that we have on our list as far as looking at being able to have cuts are two vacant, and they've been vacant for quite some time, part-time AWAC positions, and that's here again in our brand inspection program, trying to utilize the brand inspectors that we have to be able to travel a little bit farther. That amount that is there, the $56,839 for the department reduction, and here again, as I spoke of earlier, the general fund portion of that is the $19,894, and that equates to a $36,945 reduction from that earmarked fund that is specifically from the brand inspection fees that we take in. And that, Mr. Chairman, is actually what we have for our budget reductions and for our supplemental budget.
Any questions, comments? some biennialization issues, but Senator Dockstead.
Just quickly, Mr. Chairman, so I understand what distinguishes the need before a full-time brand inspector versus a part-time. You have 60 full-time, 32 part-time.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dockstetter, the way we kind of look at it in the state is we've assessed that through what there is for a need, the number of inspections, kind of the mileage they've traveled, and that's been a historic thing that has been consistent for many years. And I say consistent, but it has continually gone down. The numbers of cattle have gone down, but I will tell you the number of forms of inspections haven't gone down. Although we've had herds cut through drought that may be cut 50%, that person still has to go out and do the same number of inspections. So there's just not as many head as they're seeing. But the reason, the way that it's determined between the full-time and the full-time are what we rely on consistently for a year-round basis. Those employees are benefited employees, they are salaried, and they're expected to do an average of 40 hours a week. Now, we know during shipping season, it may be 120 hours a week, and during some of the off-season. Those part-time inspectors then fill in those gaps. And it varies. Some places in the state have very few part-time inspectors because it's pretty consistent year-round. And then our sale barn vets or our sale barn inspectors, those, of course, have to be year-round. And so then we have part-time inspectors that fill in that need for those really heavy seasons. And they only get paid by the hour for the number of hours they actually work. So they're only on the payroll when they're actually out there doing inspections, and they get paid mileage just like our other inspectors do, but they don't receive any benefits whatsoever.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I noticed that we the percentage of general fund to total department reduction is you know, that ratio seems like we're, it's, you know, 56,000 reduction, and but only 19,894 is general fund on the part-time inspectors. Is the other revenue special revenue from somewhere that kind of cost shares with the part-time inspectors?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, yes, back, and I'm going to be negligent on the year, but back around 2003, 2004, there became a 65-35% split. So 65% of it came out of the earmarked fund, 35% was paid out of the general fund. And that has been traditionally of what the job duties that they do, because we rely on those brand inspectors for a lot of safety things. They get called out at night if there's livestock on the highway. They get called by the highway patrol if they have some unidentified animals, those types of things. So that 65-35 split is the way those positions are set out.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think how that might, you know, if those are reduced at the Torrington Livestock during the sales season, how that's going to gum up the works, you know? And I don't know if that's the case with these two part-time employees, if that's where they're coming out of a sale barn. I think Torrington had that record year this year, so.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, as I stated, these two part-time positions that we're foregoing in this case have been vacant for at least 4 years,
okay,
4 to 5 years, yeah. So there haven't been anybody. So it's not like we're actually going to be pulling contracts from anybody to do this, and that's why we believe they're sustainable.
Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, I missed that.
Us house guys, we noticed that, but that's all right. No, it's a good question. It's more clarification. Appreciate it. Any further questions or comments? Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Computers, all the money and time we spent to get that up and running, just without getting into it, are we there? Or are we, I don't know if I like the way you say that.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, we're not there yet. We have made progress during this year, not as quickly as what we would like to, but I am pleased to say that the request for proposal to select a vendor will be going out next week. We're not there yet.
Mr. Co-Chair, how much money did we appropriate to help you? What's the status of how much we spent, and then, of course, how much is left?
Mr. Chairman,
you can get that
Mr.
back
Com-
to us
Chairman.
If you don't know off the top of your head.
I don't have that figure off the top of my head, but I will tell you in rough estimates that probably 98% of that is left at this point. We hired a project manager, and that project manager started on board roughly the 29th of October. That is the only amounts that have been taken out of there so far is his salary for November, December, in order to help us finish up this RFP and get that out on the street.
Well, Mr. Kocher, that's probably a good thing. Technology is moving so fast, we probably saved lots of money, and we'll have a much better system because we haven't been able to implement it for 4 years. 5 years?
It's been a long
while.
Time.
We'll leave it at a while. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if I could.
Representative Moniz.
Leanne, I should probably know this, but could you fill me in on you're talking a 65-35 split, 19 of it being from the general fund. Where does the balance of that come from?
Mr. Chairman, yep. Representative Moniz, that comes from that earmarked brand fund, which we manage separately, but in conjunction with the budget, from the producer dollars, from when brand inspection fees are assessed and paid by the producer, when range permits are purchased, when we're in our renewal for brand recording right now, from those brand recording renewal fees. All of that is put into an earmarked brand fund that goes specifically to manage that program. The brand recording staff gets paid 100% out of that earmarked brand fund. There are no general fund dollars that go to that brand recording portion of it. The brand inspection portion of it, the salaries get split out at a 65-35 split. The rest of the 200 series, the travel and all of that, it's a little bit different split, but it's still split between general fund monies and that earmarked fund that are direct producer dollars.
So, go ahead. Are you still going? So out of your authorized employees, are they all showing there, the ones that are come out of that fund? Are they showing in the budget book? The 100 authorized employees, does that include those that are fully funded with that special fund?
Mr. Chairman, yes, it does.
So that's both general. Okay, very
yes,
good.
Yes, that's both general and
that's everybody.
Specific. That's everybody.
How many of those are fully funded out of that special fund, that earmark fund?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to have to get back to you
on...
You
can swag it. I mean, is it 10 or 15?
No, it's...
most of them?
For 100%, it's only like 3 or 4.
3 or 4. Okay, good. Thank you. Okay, I think that wraps it up. We appreciate you, all your info and your good work and coming late with us, and we have one more left tonight. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, committee. I appreciate it.
Okay, Director Moore, I was hoping we'd get a break in the action, but revenue took longer than we thought. And I was hoping to squeeze you in, we'd get you on the road, but squeeze you in now before tomorrow morning. That'd be a better deal. So,
to speak, right?
Please, the light should come on.
It did come on. My name is Charlie Moore. Thank you very much for allowing me to be here today, representatives, senators. If you, I am with the Paramutual Commission. I'm the director. If you turn to page 7, that is our only change that we have. That was recommended by the governor. And I've looked at that, and we've researched it, and we seem to have no problem with that. And that's pretty much all I have. If there's any other questions, I feel the only
IT
other thing
only.
I'd like to say is we are 100% self-funded. We do not get any dollars from appropriations. If there's any other questions?
Members, any questions? Committee, just about give us just for benefit of all of us about a 2-minute real history lesson on your, since you've been there, expenditures, kind of the way the trajectory of things are going.
Chairman Harshman, thank you very much. I'd love to, and I'll make it quick. I took over in 2008. 2008, when I looked at the budget, we were spending $327,000 a year. and our revenue was $270,000 a year. I came from private sector, and if I'd looked at that prior to accepting the job, I may have thought a little differently about taking over the position. Since then, through a lot of help from A&I, our budget division, and Mr. Jones, we have brought things around. We have raised fees slightly, brought them up to the times. We have also cut prior to Governor Friedenthal suggesting that we stop any in-state or out-of-state travel. We had already done that. We had already just completely eliminated that. Since taking over at that time, we have cut our actual hard costs 40%. And I feel like we are doing a very good job of regulating the industry.
Yeah.
The industry did take a nosedive in 2010. The one operator that we did have in place chose to no longer participate in the state of Wyoming. With that, we were looking at about 6 months without any revenue. And we were able to get through that again with a lot of cost savings, a lot of work, and thank the Lord, we had, you know, another operator that came along and started having live horse racing again in Wyoming. Are there any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, we have invested some time in the last year with Mr. Moore. This is a budget that warrants a close watch on the revenue. And so we've had some dialogue with him. We've talked to him about potential reduction. We'll continue to monitor that with Mr. Moore, and so I guess I'm just kind of giving you a heads up that you may see him in front of you asking for a reduced appropriation in 15-16. But I don't want to commit to that at this point in time. We will continue to work with him just to have those discussions and monitor his revenues.
We appreciate you traveling down, and safe travels, and I'm sure we'll visit again. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairman.
Okay, committee, we are finished for the evening. Just a reminder, we are on at 7:30 tomorrow morning, and there will be no afternoon session.